When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Good morning, and welcome to episode 104 of the Jaguar Report podcast. This is also unofficially episode 1 of the Jaguars on SI podcast. Why are you shaking your head at me for, John?
It's 104. It's episode 104 of the Jaguars on SI podcast.
Okay, it's episode 104 of the John and Gus podcast. Welcome. But now we can call it Jaguars on SI, but do you want to go ahead and tell the people a little bit, give them an explainer of the brand change?
No.
Okay, yeah. Chuck Peterson. Yeah. That's Doug saying good to Jamal. Yeah.
Where my Jaguar site is hosted at, it will be undergoing a brand change over the next several weeks. So as is all of our content, as is our podcast, our social media channels. So literally nothing's changing other than the name. The game remains the same. Yeah.
You gotta change this little thumbnail we have.
Oh, I do. Oh, God.
I was gonna ask when the change will be made on the website, because I know, or at least as of a couple hours ago, it was still the Jaguar Report on SI.com/Jaguars. Yeah. And so do you have any idea just in the next couple of weeks that'll happen on the website?
Yeah, you ask good questions. Next couple of weeks, yeah. No, it's next couple of weeks. I don't know. Yeah, next couple of weeks, probably. It'll happen when it happens, but I just figured it was, now that we were given, you know, the green light, it was time to move on to bigger and better things. Like I said, though, nothing changes. You and I are still here. Same place, same podcast channels. You guys don't have to resubscribe to anything. And we went ahead and went in the back end and got everything changed. So here we are, episode 104, because we are not restarting that count. I am not.
Absolutely not. I guess I don't blame you for shaking your head at me when I went back to episode 1. But no, it's episode 104. And today we're here to start out summer vacation, basically, because the Jaguars had their 3 days of mini camp Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of this week. And then they won't be back in the facility until late July when training camp begins. And so it's a bit of a 5 or 6 week stretch where all the players and coaches and media members, including us, get a little bit of break from the action. It's really the one significant like break in the NFL calendar for the whole year. So, yeah, we got a lot of different things to talk about. What do you want to start out with, John?
That's a good question, guys. I mean, just like overall, I guess, takeaways from what we saw at OTAs and mini camps. I guess I'd say that nothing we saw over the last month and a half or so, and probably nothing should have, but nothing changed what I really see as the strengths and weaknesses of the team. I think we like nothing's really surprised us to this point, right? Like there's been a few depth guys who have taken a step forward, but it seems like the reason this team is they're going to go as far as Trevor Lawrence will take them, but also as far as the offensive line and secondary will be willing to let them be taken.
Right. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I feel like when you go back and watch the Jags from 2023, it's pretty obvious that their offensive line was kind of hindering the offense, especially, I mean, the running game was not efficient or explosive, which is what the coaches like to say is the objective or the goal of the offense. But even in the passing game, too, they were kind of forced to abandon almost everything except for like one or two step drops and getting the ball out super quickly to avoid a lot of pressure coming at Lawrence, especially when he was injured in the back half of the season. And then, there was like a big debate on like football analytics in like 2019-ish of pass rush versus coverage. And it's pretty obvious that the Jaguars are viewing pass rush as better than coverage or more important than coverage. And so it would be interesting to see this season how it'll hold up and whether they'll be able to generate enough of a pass rush to perhaps offset the relative lack of talent in the secondary. So, yeah, I feel like if anything, the biggest strength or weakness that changed during the offseason was the interior defensive line, just because A, you're hopefully getting Devon Hamilton back for a healthier season, which would be a really big deal. But the even bigger deal is obviously adding Eric Armstrong and just the type of effect that he could have throughout not just the defensive line, but the defense and really the whole team. And so we've talked for years about the lack of pass rush juice on the inside for the Jags. And so now they've got some juice.
Who's that?
Who's what? The juice?
Eric Armstrong.
Is his name not Eric? I swear that's how I've been hearing it.
Eric Armstead.
Armstead. Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
I was so hung up on the Eric part that I last name instead.
That's the true Pokeball, I guess. Yeah, I had two different guys. Didn't even know it. No, I definitely agree with you. I guess that'd be one of my other major takeaways is that the defense, in my opinion, and again, we're limited what we can see. We don't see every single practice. They don't have pads on. I think the defense is a little further along than I expected it to be. You know, I expected it to look like a unit, at least in team drills, that looked like it was still kind of figuring out what the heck was going on. And obviously, there's been a major emphasis put on communication. You can hear that side of the ball screaming every single play as they try to get on the same page. But the defense, I thought, you know, held up throughout the offseason practices. And you can say maybe that's a good sign for defense. Maybe that's a potential red flag for the offense. But, I mean, the way my narrative will be pushing it is the defense is farther along this offseason than I thought it would be. I'm expecting them to come out in training camp swinging, you know, against the offenses. We've said it before with new schemes, it takes a team maybe a couple of weeks into training camp to really start gelling. I could see them, you know, kind of hitting the ground running.
Yeah, I think we mentioned this on a previous podcast, but the lack of miscommunication, like you just said, has been apparent in Jaguars practices. You definitely would have expected a lot more just like blown coverages really during these practices that we've seen, just because it's a new scheme, new play caller, and still a relatively like young and fresh or new play caller too. And so it's been, yeah, exciting to see. I think your point is definitely fair though, where it's maybe it's a little bit more about the offense than it is the defense, but it's not like the offense has like looked bad at all during a camp. It's more of just that the defense has been looking good.
The offense has been mostly incomplete too, because they've been missing like at least one or two skill guys and then like one or two starting offensive linemen for most of the offseason. So we haven't seen what they hope is like their starting 11 on week one. We haven't actually seen on a practice field together, you know, like in a team drill setting yet. I mean, Ryan Nielsen, is he the biggest offseason addition? Is anybody else close to him? Is Eric Armstead, Mitch Morse, Brian Thomas Jr., are any of them close to the potential impact Ryan can have this year?
For this year alone, I would say probably not. I think Armstead is probably just like 2 or 3 years older than, I would have said that he would have been the biggest impact if he was 2 or 3 years younger. And then Brian Thomas would be the only other name that I'll consider. But I think he could end up having a bigger long-term impact with the Jaguars, especially if he stays around for a long time with Trevor Lawrence and Ryan Nielsen doesn't. But for this season alone, for 2024, I definitely think Nielsen is going to have the biggest impact.
It wouldn't be a surprise at all, like, if they have, like, a top 10 defense, if, like, he's a one and done, right?
If Nielsen is a one and done, what do you mean?
Yeah, he's like a head coach.
Okay, a one and done in a good way. I was thinking in a bad way. Yeah, I mean, we saw at the beginning of last year, like the Jags were a top 10 defense by a bunch of different efficiency metrics. And granted, it was mostly because they were close to the league lead in turnovers. And that's not necessarily something you can rely on or replicate. But the point is just that, like, you can kind of sway your defensive efficiency by things like turnovers or sacks. And so I won't be surprised. I think if they can create a little bit of mayhem, then I think they'll probably be like end up finishing from like 11th to 20th and to be like a middle of the pack type defense in 2024 for Nielsen's first year. But it would honestly not shock me if they ended up being a top 10 unit.
All right. So I'm going to have you put a take like on the record right now. Okay.
Okay.
Nielsen, does he have one season or more as Jaguars defense coordinator? No, defense, pick one.
Okay, here's the take. If he has less than one season, and like becomes a head coach, I think there's a better chance he becomes a head coach in Jacksonville and replaces Doug Peterson than he becomes a head coach.
Team. Well then, Gus. You think there's a better chance that Doug Peterson is fired and Ryan Nielsen replaces him than there is of any other team hiring Ryan Nielsen to be a head coach next offseason?
Yes.
Well then.
I think Nielsen is going to end up being a head coach one day, whether it's in town or out of town. But with Vrabel and Belichick kind of like, and Ben Johnson, like the three of them are still kind of lingering. Belichick might not be as serious as the other two, but Vrabel and Ben Johnson are certainly great football coaches. And so like, he's already going to be behind the two or maybe three of them in kind of like the pecking order. I don't know. I think he'll like, I expect for him to be a hot candidate at this time, or not at this time, but next January-ish. But I think it would be a little bit tough for him to get a head coaching job after just two total seasons calling defensive plays in just one season in Jacksonville.
So, say he puts together a top 10 defense this season. You're a team looking for a head coach next year. You have your pick of Ben Johnson or Ryan Nielsen. You going Ben Johnson?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. You're not even questioning it?
No, and it's nothing against Nielsen, but I feel like it's just like one of the better like young offensive minded guys to come out in a while, and like he's had like kind of the X's and O's on his resume for a minute, but now that he's actually stayed in Detroit for a couple off seasons in a row to try to continue to learn from Dan Campbell of like how to be a head coach before he becomes a head coach, I don't know. I think he'll be a better candidate, but it's kind of splitting hairs again. It's not at all to say, or it's not at all anything against Nielsen.
Do you think there's even an iota of a possibility of your proposed scenario where Ryan Nielsen, you know, is Brutus to Doug Peterson Caesar?
I think it would honestly have to be like almost out of Doug Peterson's control, where like there's just like a lot of injuries and maybe like, I don't even know. A lot of injuries would be the main thing. But then, like,
Who's your take for the record? Who's your take?
Part of the other reason that I think Ben Johnson would be a better candidate, at least to NFL executives, is that the Lions have had a lot of postseason success and just success in general under Johnson. And so I think people who are making the hiring decisions are going to like care more about Detroit's record under Johnson for 3+ years than whatever Nielsen does in 1 year in Jacksonville.
I don't know about a lot of playoff success.
More than Jacksonville, though.
Oh, one game.
Is it really only by one?
I feel they won two playoff games.
The playoffs. At least two more wins in the playoffs since like last year.
No, they have one more win than the Jaguars have in the playoffs. They won two and the Jags won one.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, the vibes I feel like nationally right now are definitely like the Lions are a fringe contender and the Jags are like more.
Yeah, well,
no man's land.
I know. Well, you feed in on narratives. Like, I mean, you do, man. You're Mr. Mike Florio on the spot for the
Jaguars. Come on, that's low.
On SI podcast. That's low. Right. You balky balled with the wrong watermark in the corner. That will be fixed next week. With that said, we're going to try to break down ads a little better. Your comments have been heard and noted, so we will be right back with our next takes on the Jaguars on SI podcast. I guess next thing I want to talk about, you dipped the pen a little bit. You put some words down. Let's educate me as you are wont to do.
First piece on SBNation.com, which is kind of exciting. I'm just doing a little bit of freelance for them because Big Cat is under the SB Nation umbrella, but all my previous posts have been BigCatCountry.com. And so I posted a big Trevor Lawrence piece today. I feel like I have like a big off-season summer piece each year, and this is basically it. So you can go to SBNation.com to check it out. And basically the argument I was making, I'll start with this. The coolest stat that I have found this offseason is that in the past two seasons, so since Peterson arrived in Jacksonville, the only quarterback who has averaged a higher depth of target, so throwing far downfield, a higher depth of target and a lower time to throw, so getting the ball out quickly, than Trevor Lawrence over the past 2 years is Tua Tagovailoa. So basically, Tua and Trevor, more than any other quarterbacks, are getting the ball out really quickly, but it's not like they're just getting the ball out to like their check down or someone that's like in the flat a yard downfield. They're getting the ball out quickly, and they're getting the ball out far downfield, which is when it works, it's really hard to stop for defenses, because then you just don't really have any time for pass rush, but then you're actually still getting burnt downfield and not just getting dink and dunked against. And so kind of my case for why Trevor Lawrence is finally going to erupt this season is that Tua has been playing with the fastest wide receiver group ever assembled over the past two seasons. He's got obviously Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, but I mean, from the running backs to the slot receivers to the tight ends, like everyone else in that offense is fast too. And so it's really helpful for Tua because like receivers are able to separate more better, but then also just get down the field more quickly, which like makes it easier for him to throw downfield so fast. And Lawrence, meanwhile, has been playing kind of on hard mode for his whole career, and including in the past 2 years, because he's had like Marvin Jones and LaVisca Chenault and these types of players who aren't necessarily like the speed threat that the Dolphins have. And so now that the Jaguars do have some more viable speed threats on the roster in Gabe Davis and Brian Thomas Jr., then like the whole offense is going to open up a little bit more, because opposing defenses and secondaries won't be able to squat on the Jaguars' offense as much and kind of like squeeze the field for them. And so now that like the deep ball will be open a little bit more for the Jaguars because they have the speedsters, that means the intermediate ball will be open a little bit more, which means the short ball will be open a little bit more, which means the running game will be open a little bit more. And so I think the Jaguars' plan for this offseason was to add speed to not just help Trevor Lawrence, but really help their entire offense, including like Christian Kirk, Evan Engram, Travis Etienne, and a bunch of other players. But really, I think like Lawrence was picked first overall for a reason. Like, he's had one of the best arms in the league since his first career start. And so now he'll, going into year four with the speed of Thomas Jr. and Davis, I think his arm and his talent is finally going to be able to be maximized. And so that's kind of the gist of the article.
So how can the combination of Davis and Thomas and Lawrence, how can that maybe in your mind help thing open up things even more for the other guys like Evan Engram and Christian Kirk and Travis Etienne?
It's again goes back to kind of like the squatting more so than like double teams. Like, I don't really expect Brian Thomas to just like come out and be acting like DeSean Jackson off the bat, and like teams are immediately have to be double teaming him, like not just playing a little bit farther back, but also double teaming him and like really paying extra attention to him. I think it's just that like defensive backs are going to have to play farther off the line of scrimmage, and safeties are going to have to play farther off the ball. And so even just one or two steps farther back makes a big difference. And like, that's one or two more steps that the safeties and corners have to close in on for the shorter routes for Engram and for Kirk. And then for Travis Etienne, he's been good. Certainly for the past 2 years, but I think like running into a heavy box isn't really his MO, and not that he's super inefficient doing that or not that he's done that a lot, but I think just with the speed of Thomas Jr. and Davis, there's going to be more two high safety looks. Peterson said that, I had the quote in the story, Peterson said at Thomas Jr.'s introductory presser that Thomas Jr. would be seeing different coverages than he did at LSU, but it's like the job of Jags coaches to still scheme up deep plays and deep shots for him. But like, kind of my takeaway from that was like, it's not just that, oh, like Brian Thomas is going to see more two high safety coverages in the league, so we're going to have to make sure he stays productive. But like, that's kind of why they got him, is so that they can like draw more two high safety coverages from opposing defenses. And then it's a lot easier to run against a two high system than a one high system. And so it's really just all about spacing. Like, it's something that you can compare to, I feel like, almost every other sport, but especially basketball and soccer, probably. Like, the Jaguars basically added really good three-point shooters this offseason to help spread the floor as a basketball metaphor or similar, not similar, but yeah. And so they're just spreading the floor for Trevor Lawrence, essentially.
And what would you say, the last couple of years, they're going for like a lot of like long, like mid-range twos or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And so like that's really what Ridley was best at. I think if Ridley had played alongside like Brian Thomas, then Ridley would have been even better and even more productive after being out of the league for almost 2 years. Because the thing with Ridley is that he has enough speed to make defenders have to give him a cushion, and then he's able to like use that cushion to just like have more space available on routes like comebacks and digs. And so Brian Thomas is a better like pure deep threat than Calvin Ridley is, but it's kind of like the same theory where since he has enough speed that opposing cornerbacks have to like respect it and play a yard or two farther back so they don't get burned, that's going to open up like the 10 to 15 yard window for Brian Thomas to be able to separate easier on comebacks and digs and routes of that nature.
How long do you think will it take for defenses to start having to respect Brian Thomas outside? Because it's not something that just happens instantly. Like Quentin Johnson was known as a freak coming out of TCU, like a size speed freak, but nobody was like paying him attention when he first started because you obviously have to do something first, and he obviously had.
I think that's where.
How long do you think it will take?
I think it'll be the first month, honestly, because I think that's where Peterson's quote comes back into play, where like he said, like, yeah, we're gonna have to like make sure we scheme up shots, because like with all these defenses playing two high safeties and cover four and cover six and like being built to stop explosive passing plays, like you really have to scheme those up now. And so like we've seen that across the past two seasons with the Jaguars, especially watching Zay Jones's tape, the amount of double moves he would have on the outside, but then also like the Chargers game when he had that long touchdown, just kind of like scheming up the right areas or the right players in the right areas. And like something the Jags like to do with Jamal Agnew was have him in the slot and just run that same route that Zay Jones ran for the touchdown against the Chargers, where it's just like a slot go almost. It's like a slanted go. I don't know, but it's basically just like a deep shot from the slot. And then Brian Thomas is one of the best players or receivers on slot fade targets at LSU, and Christian Kirk has destroyed on that route. And I feel like slot fades are like a big mismatch route for the Jaguars. And so I think they're going to have plenty of different ways to like have Lawrence throw Brian Thomas the ball deep. That's not just line up at X on the line of scrimmage, beat press coverage, and catch the ball 30 yards downfield. I think they're going to scheme up plenty of stuff for him originally, and then defenses are going to be like, oh crap, that guy's fast. And then you'll see it after like that first month.
That's honestly my thing. Is he even going to be the X, do you think?
No, I think Gabe will be more so the X, like the physical guy on the line of scrimmage, having to fight against press coverage. And then I think they're going to try to use Brian Thomas like in motion
more free releases
as much as possible. I think, honestly, like even though Thomas is faster and a better deep threat, I think they're going to have Davis in the X role and kind of being like really more the deep threat. And then they'll have Thomas Jr. running like deep crossers from the slot. That's really what I was trying to say when I said it's like
yeah.
Ghost. It's essentially just a deep crosser from the slot. So a lot of deep crossers and double moves and slot feeds and routes coming off of motion. Like there was this one route that the Dolphins and Niners popularized last year where like a receiver like Tyreek Hill would go in motion across a formation, and then at the snap, they would like sprint upfield and then run a dig. And it was just like unguardable for players like Tyreek Hill and Deebo Samuel for the Niners. And so I feel like Gabe Davis will be like almost in like a clear out route type of role
for
Brian Thomas and Christian Kirk and Engram and Evan Engram.
God, I mean, that's the one thing that we can say right now we haven't seen from Thomas, just because there hasn't been a setting for it, is how he would handle press coverage and physical coverage off the line. Like that was one of his bigger questions coming out of LSU, that and route running. And it's obvious the route running was more due to, well, they just didn't ask him to basically do anything. Mm-hmm. But like the press coverage and dealing with physical coverage, I'm interested in seeing. Last one before we take our second and last break real quick. Do you feel, after just watching offseason practices, do you feel any differently about the Brian Thomas pick than you did on draft night? Because not to say you dislike the pick on draft night, and I think we also factored in Trent Pansing, Kwesi, so much into the trade that we were both fans of the move. But do you feel any differently about Brian Thomas, the prospect, after seeing him in person over the course of this offseason than you maybe did on when, you know, it came across the ticker that he was the pick?
No, I don't think so. I think if anything, I would be feeling slightly better about the pick because Doug said, I think it was yesterday or maybe press said it on Tuesday, but someone was saying just how Brian Thomas is doing such a good job at taking lessons from the classroom out into the field. And that's like Jaguars coaches have said that that's the biggest thing that they look for during this period of offseason programs is not like they know how athletic people are because they've been scouting them for years. But they really want to know like how well they're able to translate from the classroom to the field. And the coaches have said that Thomas Jr. is doing a great job at that. And they've also said that they wanted to communicate a little bit more and just say like, hey, I've got this or hey, I don't got this. Like, what is this about? And so I think he's just kind of a quiet guy by nature. And so it's not necessarily a bad thing. Again, like the big thing is just that going from classroom to field has been positive reviews so far. And then we've talked about this. I feel like we've talked about it on the pod too, but definitely in person. Like he just moves different. And I'm just trying not to like put him into the same boat that I got Ridley into last year. I have a little bit of not buyer's remorse. I don't know what the right word is, but like Ridley last year, like I was like, this is one of the best athletes I've ever seen. And then like we got to the season and for a bunch of different reasons, several of them being out of his own control, Ridley wasn't as productive as his off-season practice is suggested. So I've been like, I've seen Brian Thomas make some pretty cool cuts and some pretty cool routes and some pretty cool snags. I've been trying to just kind of tow myself back a little bit and wait until the pads come on. But again, everything has been positive so far, but I hadn't really like thought to myself, oh, like he's better than I expected.
Give in to the hyperbole. Calvin Ridley is a sick athlete. That's still true.
Yeah, that's Calvin true. Ridley's a sick
guy. And you know what? You know what? Yeah, Calvin Ridley didn't have as good of a season as either of us predicted. He only had one of the 10 best individual Jaguars wide receiver seasons ever. And for that, you know, take me away, officer. You know, no, I stand by it. I stand by it.
Don't give in. The thing that you like about the pick still is just that Brian Thomas won't be asked to, like, get 150 targets from year one. Like the fact that Gabe Davis, Christian Kirk, Evan Engram, there's plenty of other veteran receiving options available. So the fact that he doesn't have to be the guy from day one, I think is going to be pretty big for him in the short term and the long term.
So we didn't see Gabe in team drills, but I'm going to ask you a question before we cut for an ad break and then you're going to answer when we get back. All right. I want you to rank their leaders and targets from 1 through 4. With obviously Davis, Thomas, Engram, and Kirk. And hold on to that thought. Yeah, hold on to it. Put it away. Put a pin in that. All right. We'll be right back. And Gus will deliver an eloquent? Yeah. Answer as always. Good deal. All right. We'll be right back. All right, Gus. I asked you. Now you have to tell all of the Jaguars on SI podcast listeners. Yeah, you guys get used to it. I know that one YouTube commenter who always says hello, good morning to the. Yeah, you got to change it up with the rest of us. All right, so everybody, go ahead and get in line. All right, guys, answer the question while I'm throwing orders around here.
The first two are easy to me. I thought immediately Christian Kirk and then Evan Engram in that order would lead the team.
Okay.
I think that was kind of on track to be the pace last year too until Kirk's injury, and then Engram ended up leading the team in targets. I think Kirk ended up still maybe leading the team in yards. Anyway, I would expect it to be Kirk and then Engram. No,
Ridley had 1,000 something.
Oh, true. I just forgot about him so soon. So I would go Engram. No, sorry. I would go Kirk, then Engram, and then the next two are a little bit of a toss up to me. I think I'm going to go Thomas Jr. and then I was thinking Gabe Davis at first for number three. So maybe I should trust my gut, but I just feel like Brian Thomas, I think he's going to be able to get bigger plays. And so like Gabe Davis's nickname is literally Big Play Dave. And he has the NFL postseason record for touchdowns in a single playoff game. He's definitely top 12 in like receptions of 20 plus yards since he entered the league. And so he's definitely going to have his share fair of big plays, but I think Thomas might have even more just because I think he's a little bit more of an explosive athlete. And I think the Jaguars are going to try a little bit harder to scheme stuff up deep for their 23rd overall pick rather than like a mid-priced veteran free agent. So I'm going to go with Thomas Jr., but that one's close for me. Four and five or three and four. I don't know who I would have five. Maybe. Shoot. ETN?
I think Duvernay gets more targets than ETN.
Really? That'll be interesting. I am excited to see Duvernay's effectiveness. I was going to say role, but I think we can expect his role to be pretty similar to what we saw from Jamal Agnew on offense over the past 2 years. 3 years even.
I mean, when Press was talking about receivers, he talked about, like, if you're not a top three guy, you're either special teams or, like, you have a designed role. And that kind of seemed like an obvious kind of thing for Duvernay. All right, answer this question. Over, under, combined catches for Strange and Farrell. 25.5.
I'll take the under.
The under?
Well, how many did they have last year?
How many did they have last year? What's that got to do anything? I'll look, but like, you don't think Brendan Strange is going to see a significant uptick in targets?
No, I could see him having a somewhat significant uptick in playing time, but like, I feel like he's a blocking tight end who they're hoping is going to develop into a like full time three down tight end. Sure. So like, they're definitely going to have like some like cute little tight end screen passes to him and like get him involved in some ways to try to use his yak ability. But yeah, I feel like I have to like see it before I believe it on this one.
Okay, so I mean, Luke Farrell had 13 catches.
13 catches.
All right, so last year they had 18 combined. Yeah, last year was 18 combined. 13 Farrell, 5 Strange.
So I think this year
I'll set at 18.5. Did it have over or under 18.5?
You can't change it on me. I'm going to go over 18.5, but under 23 or 25.5. You like that?
It was never 25.5. It was 20.5. Yeah.
It was. I heard 25.
I do think it's a hot take. Fair enough. I don't remember. All right. Next question for you. All right. I put a little rating together myself. Yeah. Put a little ranking together myself the other day. All right. 9 Jaguars draft picks. I want you to rank them 1 through 9 in terms of impact they make this year, starting with, the most impact to the least impact. And I'll give you mine first so you can think about it. I went Brian Thomas, 1. Jarian Jones, 2. Cam Little, 3. Yeah. Yeah. Mason Smith, 4. What? Keelan Robinson, 5. Jordan Jefferson, 6.
Okay.
Deontay Prince, 7. Javon Foster, 8. And Miles Cole, 9.
Okay, I only have one change. The only thing I would change is putting Keelan Robinson at 4 instead of 5. So that would make him above Mason Smith and behind only Brian Thomas, Jarian Jones, and Cam Little. I think Jones is a good pick right now to be the second most productive or just second best rookie behind their first overall pick. Because, I mean, he got a decent amount of hype at the draft stage. And I was like, okay, like it's the draft stage. Everyone is getting hype. But like the hype has only continued during offseason programs and practices. And so I definitely think he'll have a sizable role and a sizable effect on the defense this year. And then Cam Little, sure. Okay.
No. You're running away from a fight, and I don't like it. You don't want Cam Little to be that high. You're giving into it.
Right, but I wasn't even thinking that, but you're right. I'll put Keelan Robinson at 3 ahead of Cam Little. Cam Little, hey, it's nice not a starting job yet. I'll just say that.
Give us your kicker take. Who wins the starting job?
No, I think I think Cam Little will end up being the full-time kicker. Okay. And then, so I put Keelan Robinson ahead of Mason Smith just because with the addition of Armstead this year and then Hamilton potentially coming back in better shape and Roy Robertson-Harris still being there, Tyler Lacy has gotten some hype this offseason and looks amazing. Have you, like, in terms of, I know I had talked up Devin Lloyd a decent amount, but I feel like Tyler Lacy is also up there in terms of, yeah, like, the best transitions physically from last offseason to this offseason.
Big offseason winner for sure.
Yeah.
He had a great offseason.
He's looked great. And so I think Mason Smith is just kind of like, if he has a rookie impact, then great. But I don't even think the Jags are necessarily banking on that. I think they'll just hope he's like a efficient rotational guy who can play more snaps if needed and maintain that efficiency. But Keelan Robinson, I just like, he's been one of the players that I've kind of honestly, he's probably the rookie. Yeah. That I've like changed my opinion most about since the draft, because at first I'm pretty sure I said this on the last pod, like I kind of considered him only a special teams player, like only a kick returner. And then and that made me sour on the pick a little bit. Like, you're going to take a special teams player in the sixth round. But I've gotten over that. And I think Keelan Robinson is actually going to be involved in the offense a little bit more than I previously expected and probably more than most would expect. And it was mostly special teams coordinator Heath Farwell's comments that turned me on to it, because he was asked, I don't know if you might have been the person who actually asked about Robinson, but someone asked about Robinson and he like made sure to bring up how he scouted him as a running back too in college and how offensive guys, offensive coaches were on board with the selection and how he's going to like be a contributor in the pass game from day one. And I feel like he did have one drop 2 days ago at minicamp, but that's like the only, that's the only bad rep I can remember, especially in the passing game from Keelan Robinson. He's looked explosive. He looks like he belongs. Like, I'm just throwing out all the classic minicamp cliches, but I've liked what I've seen from him. And I think that he can definitely be more involved on offense than people are expecting as like a third down scat back, Grant type back.
Can we take it there for a second in terms of minicamp takes?
Yeah, let's do it.
I thought Mac Jones just looked all right.
He looked pretty sharp yesterday. I'm not gonna lie.
You think so?
Yeah, he's been a little bit better than I might have thought. But at the same time, I know I've said this before too. Like, he's a totally different player when there's pressure in his face. And so I think when the pads come on and when they're actually doing 11-on-11s, maybe it'll look a little bit differently.
There's a lot of scrambles yesterday. We heard a whistle. He's orchestrated the offense well, but I thought more about him before the week where he got all of the reps. But maybe it was just one of those. I mean, he was with a lot of young guys. So, All right. One player who you think helped themselves the most this offseason? I think Parker Washington.
I was thinking of.
I went from not being sure he'd be on the team to where I think even if he has like a limited role both on offense and special teams, I don't think they're giving up on that guy. Like, they spent a draft pick on him. That's always factored in. Like, they see him as like somebody they're developing. They want to reap the benefits from it. I think he's the biggest guy because he's the healthiest he's been as a Jaguar, and he's kind of shown it on the practice field. So he's the guy I think has benefited the most from the offseason.
I think the healthy point is a really big one, honestly, because it was known publicly at this point last year that Parker Washington was coming off of an injury from college and he wasn't fully recovered from it. I think that's actually partially impacted his draft stock. I think he was expected
to be more
so the fourth or the fifth round and be an early day three guy rather than a late day three guy. And so, but I completely forgot about the injury until Press Taylor or someone mentioned it at a press conference and said, yeah, he's a lot healthier and it shows. And it does show. He's been, I mean, ever since Christian Kirk like left and hasn't been practicing because of it's voluntary, like, he's been the best skill player on the field, I think.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with you. Is there anybody whose stock has maybe been hurt this offseason?
Oh, Roy Robertson-Harris is the first one I can think of, and partially because they brought in like a couple different names. Like, they hopefully they'll have better seasons from better seasons from Hamilton and Tyler Lacy. They added Armstead in free agency, and then they added two defensive tackles in the draft. So all of a sudden, that position group arguably went from a weakness to a strength, or at least from a weakness to not a weakness. And then, but really, less than that is just that Roy's been hurt during practices. And so, like, I can't really think of any player that I've been like, ooh, like, that guy looks like the fullback from last year's draft, where it's like he's clearly just like doesn't belong or like is hurting his own stock. But just because of the offseason moves and then the injury that he has, which I don't know if it's been actually identified yet for Roy Robertson-Harris, but he's been seen wearing a boot out of practices. So, yeah, that would be my pick.
All right, last one, then we'll head out of here. I'm going to ask you about a ton of rookies from last year's draft class. I want you to give me in terms of their current trajectory after the offseason, all right?
Okay.
All right, Britton Strange.
You're skipping Anton?
Okay, Anton Harrison.
Anton Harrison was the only one I wanted to talk about. Two thumbs up for Anton Harrison. I wanted to
play. What the hell is he done? What are you talking about? What are you actually talking about? I'm going to let you get to it, but for the record, people, I've seen Anton throw a medicine ball out of the wall as much as I've seen him do anything. No, but please.
Okay, maybe I misunderstood your question. I didn't know specifically about the offseason, but the reason I wanted to talk about Anton is because James Foster of A to Z Sports posted about a 20-minute film room of Anton Harrison's rookie year on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And I would just highly recommend any fans checking out that video. And honestly, any NFL fans, James is a really good follow on Twitter for anyone who cares to know ball or watch film clips.
I'm sorry for the record. I should have framed it better.
I'm used to getting yelled at by you for things I don't deserve. It's all right.
In my mind, this is a put a bow on the offseason podcast.
No, you're right. You're right.
That's fair. I'm sorry.
But I just wanted to give Anton Harrison two thumbs up again for last year as a rookie. And after watching that film review video, there was kind of two things that stood out. One was that he was so good as a technician and at using his hands as a rookie, which I'm pretty sure he was kind of known as a technician and known for like that being a strength of his game coming out of college. But it still is good to see that like carrying over in his game when you're like having such a difference in competition level from college to the pro level. And so the fact that he was able to like still be a really good technician against better opposing defensive technicians, I thought was a good sign. And even more so than that, the fact that he was so good against bull rushes last year is huge, because he was, I think, definitely known as more of an agile pass protector coming out of college. You can kind of think of pass rushers as like one of two categories, or either power rusher, like a Calais Campbell, just like a huge guy who could come up the middle sometimes, or a speed rusher like a Yannick Ngakoue, who's like really just like on the very end of the line of scrimmage trying to come off the edge and using his athleticism to win. And so Anton, like, you can kind of think of it the same way and for pass protectors. And Anton was a little bit better as a kind of like a finesse or a speed. Finesse is a better word than speed. Pass protector, because he just had amazing hands and was really, or amazing feet, and was just really light on his feet, and had really plus athleticism coming out. And so the fact that he was not just good against finesse pass rushers, but also really held his ground against power pass rushers in his rookie season, and it was when he was dealing with a shoulder injury the entire year. And so, again, just like, even though it doesn't have anything to do with what he's done this offseason, really the most he's done this offseason is post great food takes on Twitter. Just while we're talking about the rookie class, wanted to give him two thumbs up, because I think he's definitely on pace to be one of the best players on the team if he's not already.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. All right. All very good points. I think Anton is one of the building blocks right now. Like, he's one of the core pieces of their future. Like, if you're like, I got asked a question on Dilla Stream last night, like, which current Jaguars do you think will be on the roster like when they open a new stadium? And in my mind, it's like Trevor, Trayvon, Brian Thomas Jr., probably Tyson and Anton right now, like off the very top of my head. You know, like, he's one of those guys
that's a good question.
A while. All right.
No Josh Allen?
Yeah, Josh Allen obviously goes without saying.
Okay.
Goes without saying. All right.
True.
Brendan Strange, his offseason. Give it to me.
I guess I'll go middle ground.
Tank Bigsby.
Middle ground. I feel like I've seen a lot of like similar stuff from both of them last year. So like it, like since not really a lot has changed, like they clearly want to use Strange in like heavy personnel, two tight end sets, and then try to be able to like use him as a receiving weapon every once in a while out of those like heavy personnel packages. And with Tank, like we said it last offseason, how good he looked like against air and just running against no defenders. And so yeah, I feel like it's been kind of a similar story. And so my thoughts on both of those haven't changed at all.
Okay, fair. Ventro Miller.
Definitely up. I would say we'll give him one thumbs up. But there was a ton of hype from, like, Jaguars coaches, I feel like, in the offseason when there weren't any practices. So in, like, February, March, April. But now that he's actually been out on the practice squad and we're hearing even more from coaches, I can – certifiably said that his stock is up and that he deserves a thumbs up for the way he's worked this offseason and really since last offseason coming back from that Achilles injury.
We can assume Tyler Lacy is a thumbs up as well.
Yes.
Okay. You see Abdullah.
I would go middle thumb or thumbs down. And thumbs down is really just because I haven't noticed anything bad from him, but I just haven't really noticed him.
Yeah. All right, Antonio Johnson.
I'll go middle on this one just because I think the stock was shooting way up at the end of last season. And, like, I think there's just, like, nothing really has happened since then. Like, they added Darnell Savage. And I feel like Savage has been kind of, like, a brighter spot on the defense during practices that we've seen. Not that Antonio Johnson hasn't, but – yeah, I feel like his hype has just like died down a little bit. But
I disagree with this one.
You disagree with this one?
Yeah. All right, what we've seen and then Heath Farwell's comments about basically, yeah, no way he's playing special teams. I think he's going to play maybe more snaps than we, you know, previously maybe anticipated.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm not the only one who caught on to that. But Heath Farwell was basically like asked about Antonio Johnson on special teams. He's like, yeah, Antonio is great, but I don't really think we're going to have him very often. Yeah,
exactly. And for context, he played like 75% of special team snaps last year. So like if he wasn't going to play a lot of snaps, he'd definitely play special teams. So yeah. Parker Washington, we know that one. Christian Braswell.
Yeah, I feel like that's kind of similar for Yasir Abdullah, where it's like I just haven't really seen a lot of him. So I guess
Eric Hallett.
Same deal.
Cooper Hodges.
I feel like Cooper Hodges is almost similar to Antonio Johnson, where he was like kind of getting a little bit of hype at the end of last season just because people were, including myself, thought that he might be a legitimate option to replace Brandon Scherff as soon as 2 months ago. And so like there's definitely been like plenty of whispers really since he was added to the team about how he might be a viable long-term option at guard, even though he was an undrafted player. But he also, like Ventrell Miller, was out all of last year. And so I haven't really heard or seen anything of him recently.
Gotcha. Well, Gus, we got plenty of offseason takes out of there. Trust me, we squeezed every drop we could get from the offseason.
Oh, yeah.
We will be back next week. We will find something to talk about in these weeks without Jaguars football. Hopefully a Trevor Lawrence extension comes down the pipeline, not because I care whatsoever if that works out, but because it would give us something to talk about in these excruciating next few weeks. Guess you got anything?
I was going to ask, what top 10 do you want to do next week? Should we do movies or food or TV shows or TV characters?
Let's do top 10
excuses to get out of a podcast.
Top 10 zoo animals.
Zoo animals? I have to go back to the zoo for that one. When was the last time you went to the zoo?
Every Wednesday, roughly around 2:30 p.m.
Mm. There you go.
You belong in a tree, Gus, because you're a nut.
I feel like I could rank animals, but zoo animals is definitely a different category.
Okay. All right. Why don't you pick the top 10 then?
Zoo animals. I'm just going to complete.
No. We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out.
We'll leave it as a surprise to the listeners and the watchers.
Good enough. All right. Thank you guys, as always, for joining us on the Jaguars on SI podcast. I am John Shipley, my friend, co-host, zoo animal enthusiast, Gus Logue. As always, thank you guys for joining us. Do not forget to like us, subscribe to us on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Like us and follow us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Follow Gus along at bigcatcountry.com. You can follow me, as always, at www.si/NFL/Jaguars. Thank you guys, as always, for joining us.
Next thing to plug, is that okay?
Oh, yeah. Let's hear it.
1010XL is starting a weekly newsletter, and I think the first edition is going to be next Wednesday. So it's definitely going to debut at some point this month, and I'm kind of in charge of it. So just look out for a newsletter at 1010XL.
Sign me up for that.
All right, I've got your email.
Actually, sign me up for that. I'm not saying I'm down. I'm saying like you go ahead and physically sign me up for that.
All right, I'll do it. I'm the only subscriber right now in our like little beehive. So you can be a subscriber.
I just multiplied it. You all.
There you go. Appreciate you.
Well, you guys go ahead and do the same. We hit our 500 mark. We're now shooting for 1,000. We'll get there. Thank you guys, as always, for joining us, and we will be back. Don't forget the log ball, and don't forget to get Balky Bowl.
Always.
We'll be back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.